Okay, so first of all, I want to thank Zamira and the OU for having me here at this beautiful Rosh Chodesh gathering. It's really a beautiful thing. Every Rosh Chodesh, I understand that there are more and more women that come to celebrate this uniquely Women's Day, Rosh Chodesh. So I want to thank you. I also want to say that the shiur that I'm going to be giving today is almost entirely from the work of Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner. Okay, Rabbi Kirzner, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He was a giant in Torah and Midot. He was actually only here in this world for 41 years, during which time he was a pioneer in the field of Kiruv Rechokim. He left over 900 taped Torah Shiurim and 11 children. I was privileged to know Rabbi Kirzner when he was working for the JLE, which was a division of Or Sameach in the 1980s. And I will never forget how he acknowledged every person who came to his shiur with a smile of recognition and pure happiness to see you. The message of unity that we will be discussing this morning is a message that Rabbi Kirzner not only talked about, but one that he really lived. May this shiur be a zchus for his neshama, Reb Yitzchak Leib ben Zelig Zatzal. When we look at the Purim story, the history, the hidden miracles, the laws that we observe, we need to understand how it all fits together. What was the nature of the threat against the Jews? What are we meant to learn that can be useful to us here today? As we observe how much enmity there is against the Jewish people and the Jewish state. In a nutshell, what happened repeatedly in Jewish history is the nations of the world ultimately threaten us, they oppress us, and sometimes they exile us. Sometimes we go into captivity, and after a lengthy period, we accomplish freedom. Our literature teaches us that our vulnerability is merely a mirror of something that's wrong internally in the Jewish people. In other words, Hashem is trying to show us what's going on, what's going on inside ourselves. To do so, he uses the non-Jewish nations to teach us what we need to learn. Take the case of the Jews when we were at the banks of Yam Suf. On one side you have the sea, and on the other side you have a fierce, raging Egyptian army. The Pasuk tells us in Shemot, they lifted their eyes and they saw Egypt marching after them, and they feared exceedingly. Rashi gives a very mystical explanation as to why they were afraid, because you could say it's obvious they were afraid, right? One side is the sea, one side is the soldiers, of course they were afraid. But Rashi doesn't say that. He gives a mystical explanation for the fear. He says that what they saw was the angel of Egypt journeying from the heavens to help the Egyptians. And when they saw that, they got very scared. When the Jew left Egypt, he knew that he had to separate himself from the world and the culture of Egypt. If he could do that, he would be okay. He would be doing what God wanted from him. When the Jew sees the angel of Egypt after them, they fear. They know that they have not succeeded in removing the power and belief in Egyptian culture from their midst. The external grip of Egypt is powerful because it reflects an internal grip. They haven't given themselves completely over to Hashem. Thus, they fear. In the Purim story, why were we so vulnerable on the brink of destruction? Remember, if there is an external danger, it is mirroring an internal crisis within us. In order to overcome it, we have to deal with the internal crisis. Well, what was the external danger? Haman wanted to destroy us. The internal crisis is going to have to do with something we have in us that makes us vulnerable to destruction, chas v'shalom. In order to understand what was going on internally, we have to go back to the introduction to Purim, which is the story of Amalek, Parshat Zachor, which all of Am Yisrael is commanded to read next Shabbos. The intention of Amalek was to break the aura the Jews had after the Exodus. The aura of the Jew is really just a reflection of the aura of Hashem and His greatness. We are merely the vehicle to help the world see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Along comes Amalek, and he wants to break that. This is a very terrible thing. Rashi explains on the Pasuk in B'Shalach that God cries out, neither his name nor his throne are whole until Amalek will be eradicated from the world. Ki yad al keska, missing an aleph and half of God's name. We are told that it is a war that will appear in every single generation, and only in Yemot HaMashiach will Amalek be ultimately and entirely destroyed. Haman descended from Amalek. In a moment of misplaced compassion, King Shaul allowed the king of Amalek, Agag, to live. And the one night he lived before Shmuel HaNavi killed him, he fathered a child. Haman comes from that night. What is the spirit or the angel of Amalek that affected us internally, which allowed Haman to threaten us externally? To answer this question, we need to pose several others first. All of the observances of Purim express the themes of the holiday. Megillah is understandable. That's how we go over the story. We read it. The Suda is also understandable. We celebrate our survival with a festive meal. But the other two mitzvot, the other two observances, Mishloach Manot and Matanot Le'Evyonim, how do they express the themes of what Purim is all about? We could say that any day is important to give gifts and help poor people. What do these observances have to do with Purim specifically? Also another question. Why do we need to read Parshat Zachor specifically on the Shabbos before Purim? If it's so central to the message of Purim, why aren't we reading it on Purim itself? In addition to all these questions comes another big question. Why are we told that we have a renewal of the Sinai experience? In Megillat Esther, in Perek Tet, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, meaning they accepted Torah. In a sense, they re-accepted Torah on a much different level. Originally at Har Sinai, we know they accepted the Torah out of a sense of tremendous awe and respect. And now they're accepting Torah with a different mode, with a great ahava, a great love. Why is it that the holiday where we are being threatened with physical extinction is the holiday we re-accept Torah out of love? Let's go to the first question. What were we suffering from that created the internal crisis that allowed Amalek to get in? And how do we overcome it? Amalek wanted to destroy the Jewish people. His agenda is to take God out of this world, and the Jews are wrapped up with God. He understood that if he created disunity and disharmony amongst the Jewish people, he would have a really good chance of doing that. The disunity would cause a division from God, because God cannot abide living amongst a people that hates each other. The Shekhinah left Bayit Sheni for precisely this reason. If this happened, the Jews would lose their mission of reflecting the holiness of Hashem, and the world could become what he wanted it to, a godless place. That is his goal. Amalek knew that our fighting with each other doesn't allow us to have a spiritual connection to Hashem. He was intent on breaking the bonds that we had with Hashem. And all he had to do was encourage the discontent one Jew had against another. And in that way, he could eradicate us and get rid of our mission. The proof of this is how Haman convinces Ahasuerus of his plan to enact the final solution. Haman's statement, which he says to Ahasuerus in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chet, Yeshno am echad mifuzar u'mifurad bein ha'amin. There is a nation that is dispersed and divided all over the world. Haman is telling Ahasuerus, I know we could do this. There's something wrong with them that is at the core. Ahasuerus, hearing this convincing logic, knows that it can succeed, and he signs the papers. What do Esther and Mordechai do to combat this? In Perek Dalad, we read, they say, Esther says, Lech knos et kol ha-yudim. Go gather together all the Jews. Let them, everyone fast, everyone pray, together. It is clear that both Mordechai and Esther understood intuitively that what needs to happen is that we draw closer together in order to fix the problem. The Hasidic commentator, the Maor v'Shemesh, Rabbi Clonimus Kalman Epstein, who lived in the late 1700s, mid-1800s, explains in depth what we are discussing now. He says that in the first war we had with Amalek as a people, in Shemot Perek Yud, we were fighting on the ground, and Moshe was on the mountain, davening, fasting, and beseeching Hashem to help us. The Torah tells us that when Moshe raised his hands, the war went in our favor. And when Moshe put down his hands, the war went the other way. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah asks, V'chi yadav shel Moshe asot milchama? Was it the hands of Moshe that determined which way the war went? The Gemara continues to teach us, Shekol zman sheYisrael mistaklin klapei mala, that as long as the Jews looked above and committed their hearts in the right way, they were winning the war. And if they didn't look above, they would be losing the war. The Ma'or v'Shemesh asks on this Gemara, the whole war was one day. Are the Jews changing their commitment to Hashem from moment to moment? Especially after everything they just saw in Egypt when they left and all the miracles? How could this be? And what is it about Moshe's hands that are causing us to react in a certain way? What if without his hands we wouldn't think about Hashem? What's going on here? The Ma'or v'Shemesh answers, Amalek wanted to destroy any unity or harmony that existed in the Jewish people. Why was Amalek qualified to do this? Amalek was riddled with gaiva, arrogance. I am it. Ani va'afsi od. There is nothing that I hold in awe. There is only me. The numerical value, the gematria of Amalek, is 240, which, as he explains, is also the numerical value of the word Ram, meaning exalted, gaiva. Amalek personified a hideous arrogance. The Ma'or v'Shemesh states that if there is any one quality that causes divisiveness between people, it is arrogance. If I'm an arrogant person, I can't see anything good about you because I'm so full of myself. As a matter of fact, if I'm arrogant, I feel threatened by you and anything good that might be about you. All I see and all I want to see is myself and my own greatness. Try to tell an arrogant person advice. He doesn't have the ability to hear you, because he can't see beyond himself. That's the nature of gava, and that is what Amalek represents. If Amalek would be able to inject some of the poison, some of the gaiva into the Jewish people, then he would be guaranteed that they would become a divided people. And if they would be divided amongst themselves, they would become divided from God. And ultimately, the whole plan Hashem had for the world would be ruined. Who was the role model to us of all people in the Torah that we not fall into the trap of gaiva? Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu. As the Torah tells us, Va'ish Moshe Anav Mikol Adam. And Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble person that ever walked the face of this planet. When the Chumash speaks about the hands of Moshe, it means they saw the power, the essence, the koach of Moshe, which was the humility of Moshe. The Ma'or V'Shemesh says, all the time they looked at the powers of Moshe, they looked and learned about anivut, about humility. They imbibed it. It went into them almost by osmosis. When they did this, they could see the virtues of the other. And this is what it means, he said, when it says, Mistaklin klape mala, they looked at the ma'alot, the virtues of the other person. That's what they got by watching Moshe. Only by having humility, only by pushing away any feature of gava could they be unified and see the greatness of the other. And then they could commit to God and Hashem would commit to them. And in fact, they would be winning. Hashem tells us that we have to wipe out Zecher Amalek. If we take the numerical value of Zecher, we get the number 227. If we subtract 227 from the numerical value of Amalek's name, which is 240, we are left with the number 13. 13 is the numerical value of Echad, of one, which represents unity. The unity I need to have with others and with God. If I get rid of the poison of Amalek, I will be left with Hashem. 13 is also the numerical value of the word ahava, love. When there is oneness, when there is achdut, there is love. The threat of Amalek is the threat of divisiveness through gaiva that rears its head in every single generation. When we think only we know, only we are right, no one else could possibly be as correct as me, that is the poison of Amalek at work. Chazal teach us that at the end of the Purim story, there's a verse that says in Perek Chet, Layhudim haita ora v'simcha v'sason v'yikar. To the Jews, there was light, joy, merriment, and honor. Very famous pasuk. We sing it. The verse is hinting to us that these four things were things that Haman wanted to take away from us. By saying we got them back at the end of the story implies that we lost them at some point. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah explains what these four things really mean. Ora, light, is Torah. As the pasuk says, Ki ner mitzvah Torah or. Simcha means Simchat Yom Tov. As it says, V'samachta b'chagecha. Sason is mila, circumcision. As it says in Tehillim, Sosanochi alimratecha, referring to the mitzvah of Brit Mila. And Vayikar is referring to the mitzvah of tefillin. V'yikaru b'shimcha v'yiru kol ha'amim, referring to tefillin. Why did Haman want to take away these particular four things? Remember that the nature of Haman slash Amalek is to pull apart any unity and thereby destroy our purpose. The two words that Haman used to describe us are Am Mifuzar and Mifurad. Mifuzar means dispersed, and Mifurad means divided. To be Mifuzar means you are either physically far apart from your fellow man, or you are emotionally far apart. The connection between man and man is in peril in a Mifuzar situation. Mifurad means the way Hashem wanted us to operate using our minds and hearts together is split. Man was created with a mission to utilize his mind and heart together to do the will of Hashem. In a Mifurad situation, divisions or contradictions are created between the mind and the heart. They are not working together. They are in conflict. This causes a division between man and God. The spiritual fiber of the Jewish people, our ability to be truly unified, is based on these four things: Ora, Simcha, Sason, and Vikar. How so? Ora, we said, is Torah. The Torah enables us to understand things that are spiritual. Hashem wants us to understand things that are from on high, and he brings them down to us through the words of the Torah. The Torah is a bridge that creates a bond between man and God. Simcha, we said, is Yom Tov. Yom Tov enables us to take all of the physicality and lift it above, to be able to make things that are from down here on earth, things like wine and meat, Simchas Yom Tov, and truly connect with Hashem. So we bring from the bottom, we take the physicality and we raise it up to be spiritual, to be holy. Clearly these two, Torah and Yom Tov, create bonds between us and God. Haman said, we have to get rid of all these spiritual notions to disconnect man from God. Sason, we said, is Brit Milah. Circumcision is a powerful statement to man that everything in his physical being, even the sexual part of him, has a godly component. What does this mean? It means that I have to respect and have dignity for things that could otherwise be understood in a purely physical way. The concept of Brit gives me a sense of my own godliness. Even though I may feel that this is such a physical thing, I recognize, because of this mitzvah, that there is more to it. In addition to giving me a sense of respect for myself in these areas, it also gives me an awareness that each and every person has that same godliness in the midst of their physicality. It gives me respect not only for myself, but for others. And it helps create true connection amongst people. Destroying Brit, taking away circumcision, is taking away the godliness, the morality, the respect that people need to have in human relationships, where all that's left, if you don't have that, is gross physicality and desire. Destroying morality creates disunity and divisiveness between us. The true connection that we seek is really based on mutual respect. When you take away Brit, you take that away. Vikar, we said, is tefillin. When a person wears tefillin, one box goes on his head and one box goes on his arm right near his heart. This symbolizes the unity that a person has to have within themselves to work with the seichel and the regesh. The intellect and the emotions have to work together to do God's will. When our hearts and our minds are in harmony, this causes unity in the world and brings Hashem more in connection with us. We see from these four things that Haman wanted to take away. It was all about dividing and destroying our oneness with God, our oneness with each other, and our oneness with ourselves. He tried very hard to do this, and he almost succeeded. When we suffer with the way we are managing man-to-man relationships interpersonally, then the man-God relationship suffers also. So it is that pizur leads to pirud. The first place to start to fix it is to begin to recover our values. Torah and Yantov come first in the pasuk, Laihudim haita ora v'simcha, because we have to come back to our true values before we can even begin to understand how to appreciate others. Perhaps now we can understand why in the Yom Tov of Purim, which is all about destroying Amalek and the disunity that he would like to sow, we have the two mitzvos of Mishloach Manot and Matanot Le'Evyonim. Mishloach Manot is one Jew giving to his fellow Jew. It creates a oneness, a closeness between people. It is saying that everyone is important for me to recognize, to appreciate. Matanot Le'Evyonim is saying to Hashem that not only will I recognize each and every person as important, but I will use your resources and give them to the people who need them. On Purim, we give tzedakah to everyone without investigating the validity of their needs, unlike the rest of the year. On Purim, we are obligated to see every Jew as worthy without any question. In the mystical tradition of Judaism, we learn that tzedakah is an act of creating connection between God and his world. When God sees that people are using his resources to effect positive actions in the world, every act of tzedakah creates a bond between God and his people. These two mitzvot deeply create connection between Bein Adam L'Chavero and Bein Adam L'Makom, man and man, and man and God. If we look at the history of Amalek, we will notice a very interesting thing. When does Amalek come around for round two? According to Rashi, he comes right after Aaron HaKohen dies. In Bamidbar, in Perek Chaf Aleph, we are told, Vayishma HaKnani Melech Arad, and he came and he started a war. Aaron represents peace. It says about him in Pirkei Avot, in Perek Aleph, Mishnah 12, he was Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, Ohev Et HaBriyot, Umekarvan LaTorah. He loved peace. He ran after peace. And he brought people closer to Torah. Aaron was the most anti-Pizur person that existed. He lived and breathed that people should love and be together. This closeness and love brought them to Torah. And what do we have in his merit? In his merit, we had the clouds of glory. The clouds of glory kept out all of the negative outside influences and kept us, like that room that we had in the Gulf War, it kept us together as one. Aaron dies, and there's a temporary leaving of the clouds. What happens? Who starts up with us? Amalek. Amalek knows when the time to attack is. Now they are vulnerable to divisiveness. And the Jewish people are vulnerable to divisiveness. That is a very important thing for us to know about ourselves, as we can all see so easily in our own times. That is why Hashem tells us that this war is l'dor v'dor. It is forever. It's not necessarily with the external Amalek, but with the internal Amalek that gets us to divide ourselves from each other and from God and from ourselves. Perhaps now we can understand why Parshat Zachar has to be read on Shabbat. Shabbat is a day of peace, a day when we are meant to be able to transcend pettiness and division. We can let go of the things that divide us and become one in the Kedusha of Shabbos. Reading it on Shabbos reminds us what's important to all of us and is meant to help us to get where we need to go. When God sees unity and love amongst us, He will reveal more of Himself to us. Now we can see why on Purim there was a reacceptance of Torah. In all of Jewish history, when was Klal Yisrael one? By Har Sinai. Ki ish echad belev echad. What we worked on in Purim, destroying the divisions amongst us, this is what allowed us to reaccept the Torah from a place of love and choice, and we were able to reveal the greatness of Hashem anew to the world. The first Kabbalat HaTorah came from a place of great awe and respect. Naseh v'nishma. Everything has to be based on that. But then comes Kiyumu v'Kiblu, a place of pure love, of unity and choice. I'd like to read you a story, a simple story, but a poignant story. I found it on a Chabad website. It speaks about what a person can do for another on Purim and how this small action can bring Hashem in our midst. The story conveys the message that we are not an Am Mifuzar or Mifurad. It is precisely through the perfection of mitzvot bein adam l'chavero that we deepen our relationship to Hashem. The story is called Mishloach Manot for Howard the Hermit, and it was written by Mendy Kaminker. This year, we're not going to allow even one Mishloach Manot in the house, Shira announced as Purim approached. All that candy is bad for the children's teeth, and Pesach is coming. How can we clean the house if there are pretzels under the couch and cookie crumbs in the playroom? Stan sighed. He could never understand what was so bad about the children enjoying a little candy. It was true that Pesach was coming, but his wife had been talking about it since Rosh Hashanah. Actually, the minute Passover was over, she started saying, "Don't go into that room with chametz." But Shira was determined, and when Purim arrived, she was ready. "Happy Purim," the neighbor called as she knocked on the door and entered holding Mishloach Manot. Shira was standing in the kitchen, surrounded by the Mishloach Manot she had packed. On the table, there was cellophane for wrapping more Mishloach Manot and cards decorated with colorful clowns. When the neighbor left, Shira took the candies out of the Mishloach Manot and repackaged them so they could be sent to other neighbors. Late in the afternoon, Shira was finally able to relax and smile. There wasn't a trace of candy to be found in the house. She had checked off every name on the list of people to whom Mishloach Manot had to be sent. Every Mishloach Manot that came into the house had been repackaged and sent to someone else. Only two handfuls of chocolates remained, one for the children and one for their parents. The festive Purim meal was cooking and a wonderful smell filled the house when there was another knock at the door. Who could it be? "Hello, happy Purim. How nice, thank you for coming. Just 1 minute, I have something to give you." Shira ran to the kitchen and said goodbye to the chocolates. The Feinbergs, who knew they'd be coming? She was sure they had gone to visit their grandparents. Apparently not. And now Shira was left with an enormous Mishloach Manot full of the food she feared. Crumbly cookies, a whole package of toffees, crackers. Oi, what was she going to do now? "Stan, could you come here? I'm sorry, I'm busy. It's urgent, really urgent. Please come to the kitchen." Stan came in. One glance told all. "An extra Mishloach Manot, huh? Yes, we have to get it out of the house." "It's just one Mishloach Manot," he began, but Shira cut him off. "One? There's enough here for 30 families. We can't keep this in the house. Do you have any idea what we can do with it?" "Let's think. We've already given it to all the neighbors, to the teachers, and your cousin. Who's left? No one. Then let's give it to someone we didn't plan on giving to. Someone we don't usually give it to. Someone like New Think. Someone. I have a great idea. Howard the Hermit. I'm sure the Feinbergs didn't give him Mishloach Manot. I'll give him the whole package. Just take their card and stick in one of yours. You're a genius. I hope he's home. Howard the Hermit lived across the street. No one knew who had given him the name Howard the Hermit, but everyone agreed that it suited him to a T. He almost never spoke, and he was always a little disheveled. Nobody ever visited him. The children didn't like him, and he didn't relate to the children. He came and went without attracting any attention. Sometimes he muttered under his breath. Even Stan didn't really know him. Sometimes they'd pass each other in the street, but that was all. Stan made sure that the Feinbergs were nowhere in sight. He took the Mishloach Manot and made his way to Howard's house. He was a little apprehensive about meeting him. Who knew how he'd react? Would he yell, smile, or would he mutter under his breath? Stan knocked. A voice called out from the other side of the door. I'm sorry, I have no money for you. Howard, I don't want money, Stan stuttered. It's me, Stan, from across the road. 1 minute. Stan sensed that there was an eye at the peephole studying him. After a quiet moment, the door opened wide. Good afternoon, happy Purim. I've come to give you Mishloach Manot. Me? Stan blushed and nodded. You're the first one to bring me Mishloach Manot this year. Howard nodded his head, as if he was trying to remember something. In fact, I don't think I've received any Mishloach Manot for at least 5 years. Stan wanted to say that he was sorry. He wanted to apologize for the neighbors, to say that they were just embarrassed to come because they didn't really know Howard, and that from now on he would try to be a little nicer and maybe invite him over for a Shabbat meal. But Stan didn't say anything. This is very nice of you, said Howard, who suddenly didn't seem so odd. I really appreciate it. Could you wait here 1 moment? A minute later, Howard appeared with a beautiful package of tropical fruit and a bottle of good wine. This is for you. I prepared it last night in case someone came with Mishloach Manot so that I'd have something to give in return. Stan wanted to cry, but he didn't let himself. This is beautiful. You have good taste. Thank you. Have a happy Purim. Howard smiled widely and closed the door. Something to think about. What we're doing with our Purim. How we can really make a difference for Am Yisrael if we utilize every moment of the day and every mitzvah of the day to take out that little spark of gaiva, trample it, and bring in achdus, unity, and love.